His brain was already severely damaged by the lack of oxygen. If he ever woke up again, he would remain a nursing case for the rest of his life. That much was certain. A few weeks earlier, the husband had made a comment that if such a situation ever happened to him, he would not want such a thing. At the time, his wife had no idea how quickly this would happen and how this scenario would play out. So she contacted me by email, without us having known each other before. In her email, she asked me for help. She asked what she should do now and whether I could also contact people who are in a coma. I replied that that was possible and we agreed on a time to talk on the phone. During this phone call, she explained her dilemma to me. She wanted to act in her husband's interest, but was not sure what he wanted now, since he was in a coma and could no longer express himself. I sensed this man's soul very quickly and he made it clear to me that he was also interested in a quick solution to the situation. He described his condition and the situations that had occurred in the hospital room. He did this to prove to his wife that it was actually him who had made the statements. After all, the wife knew that I could not have known anything about it. The man explained to me very firmly that he did not want to live under these circumstances. For him, a life in need of care was actually out of the question. Even if that meant that he would have to die and leave his beloved family behind. But the price of such a life in need of care was too high for everyone involved. The woman said that she was afraid of making the decision for him and having the machines that were still keeping him alive switched off. He answered very clearly, saying, "I already made the decision that I don't want to live like that and I almost died. If I had been left alone, I wouldn't be in a coma now, would I?" She understood what he meant, but told him very clearly that she was afraid of this responsibility. I made a suggestion to the woman and asked her husband whether he would agree. She could have him taken to a hospice, where he would have the opportunity to gather strength in peace and quiet to make another attempt to die. She could help him by showing him that she had accepted his decision to die. They could say goodbye to each other in peace and she would not be in the thankless position of having to have the machines turned off. If he changed his mind, he could wake up from the coma, otherwise he would have the opportunity to go with dignity. I asked him if he had the strength to try again and if he could do his wife a favor so that she would not end up in this difficult situation. He assured me that he would manage it, as he obviously did not want his wife to be put through the situation, would be even more stressful. So I explained to the woman that she should tell her husband, who was in a coma, all of this again herself when she visited him again. This felt very right to her because on the one hand she could comply with her husband's wishes, but still did not have to bear sole responsibility for this step. She went to the hospital and arranged for him to be transferred to a hospice. She explained to her husband what she was planning to do now, since she now knew that he was aware when she spoke to him. She asked him to make the decision himself and told him that she would accept his decision, no matter what it was. Because now she knew that he did not want to continue living like this. After the transfer to the hospice, I called the woman again, and during the call her husband described special things about the day of his transfer to me, even though he was still in a coma. He thanked his wife for her courage and said that he needed a few more days to gather strength for his journey. In the meantime, his children and other relatives could say goodbye to him in peace, which they then did. And so it took about another week after he was transferred to the hospice until his heart finally stopped beating. His wife finally informed me of his death and she was glad she had done so. She was very grateful to her husband for freeing her from the burden of the decision. He also thanked her and once again clearly expressed all his love for her and the children. Despite her sadness, she was very stable and what remained was the gratitude for having known and loved each other. It is incredible how big the difference is when people receive end-of-life care and when this is not the case. Accompanying relatives is at least as important as accompanying the dying person themselves. If you don't have this kind of support, you usually don't get over the shock caused by the loss so quickly. That is why an important part of my work is end-of-life care. It is always a blessing for me to be able to accompany and support people in this process. Many clarifying moments and healing conversations can still take place. You can consciously say goodbye and express everything that is still important to you. Even if it is just the three words "I love you." At least after death you won't have the thought, "Oh, if only I had." There are always surprises in life and of course also during contacts with the afterlife. That's why as a medium you shouldn't have any fixed ideas in your head about what the next individual session might look like. Because, as is usually the case in life, things turn out differently than you think. A classic example of this was a session with a woman who wanted to contact her deceased father. So I asked her biological father to come to me in my mind and someone appeared. I described the woman's characteristics and appearance and whatever other information flowed. When I asked her if she recognized him, she said, "Yes, but that's not my father, it's my uncle." I thought I had made a serious mistake and apologized to her. So I asked again about this woman's father, and the man I had described earlier was adamant that he was the father and remained stubborn in my perception. When I told her this, she began to smile. "So it is," she said and told me about her suspicion that her alleged father was not her biological father, but she had kept this suspicion to herself until now. She told me that there had been many indications of this since her childhood and that she had heard something like this. The deceased, who claimed to be her father, provided all sorts of information, and his version of the story suddenly made a lot of sense in this woman's childhood. I asked her to please keep me updated if she found any evidence to support this suspicion, because I was now really curious. When I had already forgotten about this session, I received a letter from this woman in which she wrote to me that what had already been announced during our session had actually come true. She thanked him again from the bottom of her heart, because her world had finally been put right and she now finally knew that she was not crazy. Her feeling had not deceived her. Many people imagine contact with the deceased to be very mystical or abstract. But communication works just like earthly communication, only on a mental level. And other things in the world beyond also have parallels to our everyday human life. We all know the situation where you meet a person and knows that you have met her somewhere before. You recognize yourself. That is how it is for me with deceased people too. It has actually happened to me several times now that people came to me independently of one another and during the session it turned out that I had already made contact with the deceased for someone else. It usually doesn't take long before I remember where I know the person from. For example, I say during the session, "This woman looks familiar to me, could that be?" And the client then says, for example, "That could be, because my sister was with you a few months ago and also wanted to contact the same deceased person." It is really fascinating what I get to experience in my job and I am often amazed at some connections and events. One side of me is still amazed that contact with the spiritual level works like that and how everything is connected and interconnected. I think that when no part of me is surprised anymore, the time has come to stop this work. But helpfully there will be a lot of time before that happens. Psychic abilities and solving crimes. For many people, it is a logical conclusion that clairvoyant or psychic people can help solve crimes. This idea is not wrong, but in reality this assistance looks a little different than you might imagine. The prevailing image is that a psychic person can empathize with a crime and then give the name, address or other details of the perpetrator. There are actually cases in which this works, and it has happened from time to time in the past. It has also happened that a psychic was led directly to the body of a dead person. But as already mentioned, this is not the rule. Now you naturally wonder why these are rather exceptions. It is a legitimate question, and in order to understand this phenomenon, one must consider how the medium obtains information about crimes in the first place. This quickly explains why the results are sometimes very specific and other times remain incomplete. A person with a mediumistic disposition can obtain information about crimes from various sources. However, it should also be emphasized here that there are mediums that are more talented when it comes to crimes than others. If a person has been killed in a crime, The medium can make contact with the deceased victim and obtain information from him about the perpetrator, the course of events, etc. Now, the victim's knowledge of the crime that cost them their lives varies greatly, because it depends on how consciously the deceased experienced and perceived the crime themselves. If they did not see the perpetrator at all, for example, they cannot describe him either, because these images could no longer be stored in their personal experience computer. The same applies to crime scenes or locations where objects were found. If the victims do not know this environment from their lives, they cannot give the exact address or location. However, they can describe everything they see around them, which often helps to solve the case. A good example of this is the crime committed against a woman who did not know the place where her body lay during her lifetime, but was able to describe the surroundings in very good detail. She described the exact type of forest, what sounds could be heard in the immediate and indirect surroundings. She showed the medium pictures of the very special shape of a lake and of distinctive buildings that stood around the lake. In this way, like a puzzle, the individual pieces could be put together and combined and used with the clues already found. On the other hand, if the victim knows the environment in which the crime was committed, the deceased can usually name the location of the incident very specifically. This, of course, also applies to the description of the perpetrator. If a victim did not know his perpetrator but saw him during the crime, the deceased can at least describe the perpetrator. If the perpetrator and victim knew each other during their lifetime, this person is quickly identified or named. The easiest way to imagine this is to compare the descriptions that a medium can get from the victim with normal witness statements. A policeman who questions a witness is basically doing nothing different. The medium also questions a witness, with the small difference that he is no longer physically alive. A good medium, unlike the policeman, has another option: lets the soul of the perpetrator. The medium can also see the crime through the eyes of the perpetrator, like a film, in their mind's eye. In this way, they can also sense the motivation that led the criminal to commit the crime. The medium then has access to the perpetrator's emotional world and images, which can provide a large amount of information about the course of the crime and the background. However, this service cannot be expected from every person who calls themselves a medium. On the one hand, it depends on the person's talent, and on the other hand on whether they are able to deal with a topic such as murder. Because when you sense the motivation and mindset of a criminal, deep human abysses often open up. You have to deal with that. Otherwise, as a medium, you should avoid this field of work for self-protection. Another factor that plays an important role is the medium's personal wealth of experience. The deceased, that is the victim of the crime, is dependent on the medium's capabilities when passing on his information about the crime. This means that if the medium has stored many different images and scenarios in their brain through their personal wealth of experience, the deceased can also use and activate all of these things to communicate. However, if this pool is correspondingly small, the deceased's options are also limited. You can imagine it like an interpreter who translates between two people. If the interpreter has a very good command of both languages and knows a lot of vocabulary, the result of his translation will be very accurate. The communication or exchange can then take place in great detail and to the point. However, if the interpreter is not so experienced and only knows a few vocabulary words, he will have to paraphrase more and the translated result will not be complete, as he does not understand everything he is supposed to translate. After all, you can only pass on what you yourself have understood. Another way to get information about the course of events of a crime is to communicate with the medium's spiritual helper. However, this requires a clear connection between the mediumistic person and his spiritual helper. This is often not the case, and solving crimes is not usually one of the main tasks of the spiritual helpers. But if important information is missing, the medium can ask the spiritual helper for it. The following problem is crucial for the success of solving crimes: both the victim and the perpetrator must want to be found. Now you might think that every victim wants to be found and the perpetrators definitely don't. But that is not the case, and there are reasons for that too. Of course, there are perpetrators who do not want to be caught and have no interest in taking responsibility for what they have done. But there are also those for whom the burden of responsibility of having a human life on their conscience becomes too great and who regret their actions. They lack the courage to turn themselves into the police, and yet they still want relief. The medium will receive very specific information from such a perpetrator. Those who do not want to be tracked down because they do not feel any remorse or regret will only give vague statements to the medium. As far as the victims are concerned, there are also different views on the desire to be found. If a deceased person has a strong connection to their relatives, which is usually the case, they will do everything they can to ensure that their body is found and that they can be buried. However, if the family environment is very unloving, selfish or even violent, the deceased may be hesitant. If relatives or friends are involved in the crime, this can have a strong influence on whether the victim actually wants to be mourned and buried by them. An ideal condition for using a medium to solve crimes is when the perpetrator and the deceased victim want to be found. In this case, the information from both sides is so specific that it is not difficult to use it accordingly. Cooperation between the police and people with media skills. It is easy to believe that cooperation between the police and people with media skills works very well and should naturally be part of the police's investigation methods. Unfortunately, the reality is different, although such a connection would be more than sensible. The reasons for this can be found on both sides, and it would be too easy to blame this lack of cooperation on the police alone. Most people think that the state authorities can do nothing, and you would lose if they followed up on tips from people with media mystic abilities. That would certainly be the case if all mediums went about their work with similar quality and modesty. Unfortunately, many of the spiritually oriented do not have their egos under control, so an incredible number of crazy people call the police after a crime has been reported and say that they received information about the crime because, for example, they flew over the scene of the crime on a broom during the time in question. This is just a small example of the type of calls that the police then receive. If a medium who works seriously does call, it is very demanding that the police officer on the other end of the line immediately identifies this caller as a serious medium. Unfortunately, there is also not enough time to check all of these tips from supposedly clairvoyant people to find out which information would stand up to scrutiny and which would not. Another problem that the police have when using people with media mystic abilities is the legal basis. According to the law, the testimony of a seer or fortune teller is invalid in court, even if a perpetrator could be caught on the basis of this testimony. In the worst case, a suspect must be released if it turns out that he was found on the basis of information from a clairvoyant. In contrast, the information given by an anonymous caller to the police must be investigated, as it is recognized by law as a basis for conviction. So a legal basis would first have to be created to enable officers to officially cooperate with people with media mystic abilities. But then there are still personal reservations about this type of information gathering. Many police officers believe or know about such phenomena, but understandably do not want to make a fool of themselves in front of their superiors or colleagues, as not everyone is convinced of such talents and it could be interpreted as a weakness. This is the reason why cooperation between the police and sensitive people only takes place unofficially and secretly. Fortunately, there are some officers who are still very curious and include all possibilities in their investigations. They simply don't make a big deal about it and use their free time for such spiritual excursions. If they do find something, they have to come up with an official explanation of how they came to this information. Ultimately, it is not very difficult to recognize a reputable medium. If the officer knew what to expect from the medium, he could check with a few questions whether or not it is a person who is actually in contact with the deceased victim. However, this requires some knowledge of how mediums work, and unfortunately this is usually not available. For the police and mediums to work together optimally, the following things would be necessary. A modest, honest and well-trained medium who is not interested in collecting the credit for solving the case, but who stays in the background. A police officer who is somewhat familiar with how mediums work. Respect and consideration for the other person's thoughts and activities. A legal basis that allows such information to be used in court. These are 4 points that may sound obvious to many, but unfortunately are not usually the case in reality. If the first 3 points are met, nothing stands in the way of successful cooperation. Personal experience in solving crimes. I myself have had various experiences with the police in relation to my gift. There were both positive and negative experiences in how my ability was handled. I gained a deep insight into the processes of police work and also met so-called clairvoyants who do not exactly support the credibility of my profession. I was very impressed by my encounter with a convicted child murderer. One day I received a letter from an incarcerated man who asked me for help. He was very open and explained to me what he had been convicted of. He said that he was not the perpetrator of this heinous crime, however, and hoped that I could somehow help him prove it. He had seen me on television once and for some reason trusted me. Strangely enough, I immediately had the feeling that he was telling the truth, but I still needed to know a few things from him before I would put my skills at his disposal. After all, it was about murder. He answered my questions very promptly, and I decided to request a visit to the prison in question. The meeting, which took place 2 months later, impressed me in many ways. I first had to go through a lot of security gates, which made it very clear to me how cut off these imprisoned people are from life. Permanent control and no intimacy, anywhere. I asked myself what would be the greater punishment for me personally, to be cut off from life, nature and loved ones, or not to have a single moment of intimacy. When we then met under the strictest guard, I was pleasantly surprised. I was faced with a polite and intelligent man with an open gaze. He answered my critical questions and I suddenly felt the dead girl next to me, whose death he supposedly had on his conscience. He showed me thick files that he had collected and studied over the many years he had been in prison. I asked him how he imagined working together and he just wished that I would ask the girl a few things about the events of the day of the crime. There were gaps in the investigation and only the girl herself could describe them, as there were very few witnesses other than her. He simply hoped that her testimony would clarify the open questions and that he could thus achieve a retrial. The deceased girl confirmed to me that it was not him and described the actual perpetrators to me. I described them to him. What I described matched his own suspicions and investigations. At the end of the hour I was allotted with him, he said, "Even if it is the last thing I do, I want the real perpetrators to be found. Because such a crime must not be repeated. In the meantime, we have written to each other from time to time and I was even invited to his wedding in prison, which I was very honored about. He and his current wife rarely see each other during the requested visiting hours, but he is not giving up on the attempt to achieve a retrial. If my gift helps him to bring the truth to light, then I would be very happy, because I have gotten to know him and his wife as very fine people in the meantime. Unfortunately, he is one of the exceptions, because the criminals I have come across cannot be described as fine people in the slightest. It happens again and again that police officers turn to me and ask if I can help them. I am then happy to tell them what the deceased tells me about what happened. Often the statements are so specific that they are easy to verify. For example, there is a missing person case in which it has long been clear that the victim has long since died. There are also suspects who have even confessed in the meantime. But since the remains have not yet been found, no conviction has been made. I have been approached by several people and asked if I could say something about the location where the remains were found. I described the place very precisely with the help of the deceased, and when I drove there one day, I was able to locate the location very quickly. The police officer who inspected the place with me assured me that no one had actually searched there yet and that the place would make sense from a forensic point of view. He wanted to ensure that a search was carried out there. Unfortunately, This officer was later undermined by his colleagues to such an extent that no search has been carried out at the location to date. I have already explained the reasons for this disharmonious cooperation a few pages ago. I am sure that the remains of this person will be found at some point. It is just a shame that time will pass for this and that others will probably fall victim to the perpetrators by then. In any case, I pray that something as horrific as this will not happen again. The most successful cooperation I have had in relation to a crime so far was with the mother of a young woman who had been killed. This mother had no reservations about my work and was thus able to make optimal use of the information she received from her daughter through me. The daughter was 16 years old when she was killed and had a strong sense of justice even during her lifetime. It is therefore all the more understandable that she did everything she could to put the perpetrators behind bars. She had seen the perpetrators closely and was able to describe them very well. She told me names and places where she had previously encountered them. I knew this area a little myself and was able to recognize some of her descriptions. The mother did not give up and ultimately even stood up to the police, who thought she was crazy and made this clear. Therefore, the clues weren't investigated seriously enough. The mother finally found the perpetrator on her own. He confessed to the crime and has since been convicted. Despite the clear evidence, which could no longer be dismissed, the mother had to listen to some comments from the judge about her. After the verdict was read out, he even told her that she should be glad that he didn't have her taken away in a straitjacket. It was the mother's clues that had led to the perpetrator. These are all incidents that show how complex this issue is and that it is not enough to just give the name and address of the perpetrator. Personally, I am happy when my gift helps someone and can contribute to finding the truth. Fortunately, I no longer have the expectation that the police have to take me seriously. If someone needs my help, I am happy to give what I can, but I am also just a small piece of the puzzle in a complex structure. Afterward. I hope that with this book I have succeeded in opening the door to the spiritual world for you so that you have been able to gain some insight. I am glad that this talent has given me so many opportunities to accompany and help people on their journey through life, because the areas of application are really very diverse. Like many other talents, this mediumistic gift is a service to people, and I try to make my contribution as best as I can. If everyone could make their contribution, then perhaps it is possible to imagine what effect that would have on our world. Personally, I am full of confidence that humanity will find the right path, even if it may not seem that way at times. Because one thing is certain, everything you give from the heart will come back in some form at some point. However, that should not be the motivation for your own giving. So it makes sense to think about the contribution you yourself would like to make to this world with all your heart. Because every person has something special within them that only they can enrich others with. Perhaps you are now curious about your personal potential. Help has many faces, but only one source, unconditional love. For me, there is no doubt that the spiritual world exists, and I hope that this book will show why that is so. I had to and was able to learn a lot, and I hope that it will stay that way for a long time to come. Life is like a school in which God is the teacher, and we are right in the middle of it. So there is always something to learn or experience, we just have to be open to it. If someone thinks life is not a game, but a struggle and a fight, then they should remember that you always have a choice, you just have to make it and do everything necessary to make the dream become reality and the present. The spiritual world is a level from which we can receive great help and support, but the responsibility for our actions still remains with us. We alone decide and thus determine the quality of our lives. My motto is, even if it seems difficult sometimes, it is always worth making your contribution and experiencing happiness as a result. I wish you a lot of it and hope that you have now found suitable answers to many of your questions. Acknowledgements. When I lie in bed at night, I always say thank you for the day. That is why I would like to put my thanks at the end of this book. There are so many helpers who accompany me in my life, and I would like to express my gratitude to all of them because, among other things, they have once again actively supported me in writing this book. Be it by proofreading, babysitting, listening, missing out on me, and much more.